Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Ched Amud Aleph by the two dots. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Notnim La Kol Truma. So in the discussion of the Mishnah, in the Mishnah Rishona, which was the case where a woman was entitled to get Truma once she crossed over the 12-month date from the time that she had been asked for her hand in marriage, then we started to give her Mizonot, and within those Mizonot, she was also entitled to eat Truma. As opposed to the Mishnah Achrona, who says that she doesn't get Truma until she is Bechupa, Nisuin, completely married. So according to that, we had a machloket within the Mishnah between the Tanaim as to how much Truma did she get. Rabbi Kiva was of the belief that she got 50% Truma, 50% Chulin. Rabbi Tarfon said, Notnim la kol Truma. We give her the entire amount in Truma. Amar Abaye, Machloket bevat kohen lekohen. Machloket is only with regards to a bat kohen to a kohen. Aval bevat Yisrael to kohen. On the other hand, if it's a bat Yisrael that's marrying a kohen, divrei kol mechsa chulin umechsa truma. Then everybody agrees that it's 50% chulin and 50% truma. That's number one. V'amar Abaye, machloket be'arusa. Again, the machloket is only with regards to an arusa. Aval benisua, with a fully married woman who has a consummated marriage, divrei akol mechsa chulin umechsa truma. So what Abaye does over here is qualifies the machloket within the Mishnah with regards to akol truma. And he says that akol truma only has application, number one, by a bat kohen to a kohen, and number two is only when she is an arusa. The reason being that a bat kohen has experience with truma. Since she has experience with truma, we have two things that are an outcome of that. Number one is, we can give her 100% truma, and she can deal with the fact that, during her yamim, that she is tmeah, she will either know not to be mitameh the truma, or number two, be able to sell it, to monetize it, and then use those proceeds to buy herself chulin. In addition, she also has her father. Her father is a kohen, in the past has done that for his daughter. He has women in his household, and he has to take care of them during their Yemei Tuma. So her father has sold Truma in the past. So because of that, we say that a Bat Kohen is well-versed in the issues of Truma, both from taking care of it, and as well as selling it, and she might have the assistance of her father as well. Therefore, we can grant her 100% Truma. A Bat Yisrael to a Kohen, who has no experience with Truma. She may not be able to take care of it, do the proper shmira in terms of Truma. She also doesn't have any experience in selling Truma. She doesn't have a father who's doing that. In that case, everybody agrees 50%, 50%. Again, with regards to an arusa, now the arusa who is in her father's house, then again, 100% Truma, he can give to the arusa because the father will assist her in dealing with the truma and selling it and her yemei truma. On the other hand, once she is a nisua, then she is in her husband's house. And then if the husband, who is the one who's supposed to be mitareach for her, take care of her, he's providing her 100% truma. And who's going to be the one to sell the truma? Who's going to deal with all of these issues if not her husband? And her husband's handing her 100% truma. So there again, we say 50% truma, 50% chulin, when you reach the point of nisua, as Rashi says, lefi shekol kvoda bat melech pnima, that the woman's kavod is the tzniut, the ability not to have to go out and transact in the marketplace, ve'avia v'achia ina nesla, and she no longer has her father or her brothers to take care of her, she tasku b'tzarcheha, that will take care of her needs. And the husband, who is supposedly now her guardian and should be taking care of her needs, is handing her 100% truma, so that's not acceptable. And we say she has to get 50% truma, 50% chulin. So Abaye qualifies the machlok between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva, saying it's limited to a bat kohen to a kohen, and it's limited also to the time of Erusin. But a nisua, or a bat Yisrael, even at the time of Erusin, will be entitled to 50% truma, 50% chulin. That way she has what to utilize during her Yemei Tuma. As I mentioned yesterday, the 50-50 seems to be an odd split, because if you look at Tumat Nida, it would really turn out to be 25%, 75%. even if you give a little more excess, seemingly it was for larger issues, which is the fact that she is possibly a zavag dola at sometimes, or there's other tuma besides tumat nida that you might be dealing with, and therefore 50-50 gives her wiggle room in case she is tmeya for longer durations of time. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports this understanding of Abaye, which is Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Notnim La Kol Truma, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Mechsa Chulinu Mechsa Truma. So again, the same opinions that we saw in our Mishnah. Bamed Varim Amurim, so now it's qualified here by the braita, Bebat Kohen Le Kohen, Aval Bat Yisrael Le Kohen, Divrei HaKol Mechsa Chulinu Mechsa Truma. So the first qualification is this machloket only applies to a Bat Kohen, marrying a Kohen because of the experience that she has with Truma. But a Bat Yisrael would not be subject to this machloket, then everybody would agree 50% Truma, 50% Chulin. And another qualification, Bamed Varim Amurim Ba'arusa. Again, when she's in her father's house, where there are men or guardians that will take care of her, Aval Benisua, where the guardian is her husband and he's the one who's supposed to be taking care of her and he's handing her the food, then Diriako Mexa Chulin U Mexa Truma. Everybody agrees that it'll be 50% Truma, 50% Chulin. So we see the two qualifications that Abaye made are here in the explicitly in the Braita. Rabbi Huda ben Beteiro Omer, Notnim la shtei yadot shel Truma, vachat shel Chulin. Rabbi Huda ben Beteiro says she gets 2/3 Truma, 1/3 Chulin. So first of all, in terms of a breakdown, that's a little closer to the 25%, 75%. Then Rabbi Akiva's 50%, 50%. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nokdim La Kol Truma, give her 100% Truma, V'hi Mocheret V'lokechet B'damim Chulin. And she'll sell, monetize the Truma, and use those monies to purchase Chulin. Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel Omer, Kol Makom Shehuzkara Truma, Nokdim La Kiflayim B'chulin. Anytime you want to give Truma, you got to give her 2 times the Truma instead of Chulin. So in terms of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, it's clear that he understands that Truma is not worth as much as Chulin. How do we make sure that this woman is protected? We say you're going to have to give 200% of whatever mizanot she's entitled to if you grant it in Truma. That, first of all, gives her the ability to sell it at the lower price, which Truma fetches in the marketplace because only Kohanim can eat it. And then she can utilize that to buy Chulin. But he gives her so much in excess. The price probably was not 50% of the price of Chulin, but he gives her so much in excess that she basically can sell it at whatever price it fetches in the market and not have to worry about it because she has sufficient Truma to sell that would allow her to buy the Chulin. My Benayu, what's the difference between these opinions? Ike Benayu Tircha. The difference between them is who has to make the effort. So Rashi over here says the difference of opinions here is between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Notnim HaKol Truma, V'hi Mocheret V'lokecha B'damim Chulin. Rabban Shem Gamliel says the same thing. The answer being that the Tircha is the difference between them is who has the obligation for dealing with the Truma. In the case where he gives it all Truma to her, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying she's basically got to deal with it. It's her issue. She's got to fetch the price that's needed and then replace it with Chulin. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is basically saying it's the husband's problem. And since the husband's only providing with the Truma, we're going to provide her with such excess that she will not have any issues. She will not have to work hard at it. She can simply give it out to the market at a 50% discount, which should fetch easy buyers, and get the Chulin that she needs. So the question of whose issue it is, or who we burden with the selling of the Truma, that's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rashi also notes over here, in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Notnim la hakol Truma, that is exactly like the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, who says, Notnim la hakol Truma. What is the difference between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Yehuda, both of whom say that she gets 100% Truma? So Rashi says, Ben Rabbi Yehuda la Rabbi Tarfon ika, Dila Rabbi Tarfon Savar, Notnim la Truma, Kedei Mizonota. Rabbi Tarfon believes that she gets exactly the amount of mizonot she needs in Truma. She does not get excess Truma. She simply gets mizonot. The mizonot can be filled by Chulin or they can be filled by Truma. Ula Rabbi Huda, Notnim la Truma, Kishir, Shimbat likach Mechsa Chulin, Lo Tivchot min Dmei Mechsat Chulin. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says that she gets enough truma that when she wants to sell it, that will be the value of the chulin that she needs to replace it with. So Rashi sees the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Tarfon based on how much truma she gets. Rabbi Tarfon simply says she gets mizonot. Mizonot can mean truma, mizonot can mean chulin. We don't give her any more than the mizonot she's entitled to. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says if you're going to hand her truma, you have to give her enough truma that she can sell that and make it into chulin. What's probably driving Rashi is the difference that we saw, the Gemara said, the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Over there they said, who is the tircha on? But the assumption being that both Deot here, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yehuda believe that she has sufficient truma to sell to make it into chulin. It's just that Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel gives her excess, so it's so easy to do, and therefore there's no tircha. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda gives her sufficient to do it, but at a market price, and she's got to work at it, then that's the difference between them. That's the tircha issue. Then to Rabbi Tarfon, who says, no, you just give her truma, and that's her issue. She needs chulin, she's got to figure out how to get the chulin, even if the truma does not add up to the chulin that she has been given. Just know that there are other Rishonim who say just the opposite of Rashi, who say that Rabbi Yehuda says that she gets truma, and that's it. And Rabbi Tarfon is the one who says she gets sufficient truma to make it into chulin. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, "Hayavam eno machil bitruma." The yavam doesn't have the ability to grant the woman truma. My time. What is the reason that the yavam doesn't have this power? Kinyan kaspo amar rachmana. When it comes to the kohen, the entitlement of truma is to kinyan kaspo. Kinyan kaspo amar rachmana. V'hai kinyan de'achiv hu. This requirement of kinyan kaspo means his kinyan. Over here, it's not his kinyan, it's his brother's kinyan that generates the necessity for the yibum over here. So hey, kinyan doesn't exist. Rashi on the Mishnah gives even a more stark formulation of this, which is, paka kinyan d'achiv. The kinyan of the first brother is gone. It's now no longer around. So there's no kinyan here whatsoever. You could have said it in a lighter form, which is, yes, the kinyan of the first brother is still there, but that just cannot generate the type of kinyan kaspo that would allow the second brother, the one who is doing the yibum, to grant her truma. But Rashi says it's gone, the gamrei, the first kinyan, and therefore Rashi sees this limud in the Gemara as 100% limud de oraita. And that's what Rashi said in the Mishnah, that the yavam cannot grant the woman truma whatsoever. Doesn't matter on the scenario. Doesn't matter if she never ate under her husband's auspices, or whether she already had crossed over the 12-month threshold and was eating on her husband's auspices, then he passes away, she still can't get truma from the yavam. She'll have to stop at that point when she hits the point where she is now under the auspices or waiting for the yavam. The zikat the yavam will not suffice. The Rabbeinu Tam, and we mentioned this yesterday, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Tosafot disagrees and says this is just an asmachta. This is just the limud midrabanan, and therefore, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, if she started to eat mizonot under her husband, she would also eat and continue to eat under the auspices of the yavam, because the kinyan is still there. It's just that we don't normally allow her to eat because of the yavam, because people will get confused, people won't understand why this yavam with less than 12 months is able to feed her truma, what exactly is the relationship of zikat yavam. For many reasons, we have issues as to why we will not grant her truma. On the other hand, when it comes to her husband feeding her truma already, now she's going to the yavam, there she can continue to eat truma because the kinyan kesef really is intact, and this limud is simply a limud midrabanan. The zika de yibum in the interim is still a kinyan kaspo. Right, so he says here, that generally, when it comes to yibum, the individual doesn't tarry. He either does chalitza right away or does yibum right away. That's why they generally didn't establish mizonot from the yavam. Commotion tiknu mizonot v'gad zman debal. So the Rabbeinu Tam says that the yavam has to make a quick decision. He has to deal with her and make that decision, so we'll know right away what his path is. Is he going to marry her or is he not going to marry her? And therefore the issues of simpon and changing his mind will be done with very quickly. And that's why if she already ate under her husband, she'll continue to eat under the auspices of the yavam. Now, I think that is somewhat fanciful thinking, because she has to wait a minimum of 3 months before he can perform Yibum. So I don't know how much immediate action is taken here. Maybe he makes the decision right away. Doesn't seem like it. Seems like there's a window of time, 3 months, in which he has to decide anyway, because he can't marry her within that first 3 month period. And he can't do chalitza with her if she's pregnant. So we would wait for the requisite 3 months anyway. So Rabbi Natan suggests that it happens right away, and therefore we don't worry about the issue of chalitza. Right. Once he performs Yibum, then according to Rashi, he simultaneously creates a kinyan through the bi'ah for nisuin and erusin. That's the way Rashi reads it. Or according to the Rabbeinu Tam, she becomes a nisua, and that basically solidifies the original kinyan that her husband had with her. Yasta shisha chodoshim bifnei abal. She did 6 months before the husband, and then 6 months by the abam. Or then the Mishnah gave other scenarios, which was 12 months minus a day with the husband, and then 1 day with the avam, and then vice versa, 1 day with the husband and 12 months minus a day with the avam. In all those cases, she was not entitled to truma. Gemara says, Hashta bifnei abal amart lo. When you said it was before the baal, meaning that there was 12 months with the baal minus a day, and you still said that she wasn't entitled, bifnei yavam evai, you have to tell me by the case of yavam that she has entitlement. Again, the cases here are very difficult because you had one case of 6 months, 6 months. Then you had a case of 12 months minus the day before the baal and then the yavam. And then the reverse, which is 1 day by the baal and then the rest with the yavam. The Gemara says over here, if the entirety of the time was before the baal and now she wasn't entitled, you're going to tell me bifnei yavam that she is entitled? Zo, ve'in tzarich lomar zo ktani. It is a literary style of the Mishnah to say, this, and we don't need to say this. So not only in the case where it was almost all with the husband, is she not entitled, but even in the case where she was in front of the Yavam, she also wouldn't get it. It's not a chiddush, the second statement. It's just a statement that says, not this, and not this. But no chiddush in the statement. Tosafot had the reverse girsa, and many of the Rishonim had another girsa, which was, the girsa should be, lozu avzu ktani. Not this, and we don't need to say this, but rather, not only this, but also this. So what's the difference? The difference is where the chiddush is in the statement. The way that Rashi has it is that the biggest chiddush is in the first statement. Zo, that's the chiddush that we tell you, that Yavam has no power. Then after that we say, Vein Tzarech Lomar Zo, you're right, I don't even need to tell you the next piece, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And that's a literary style, and that's what Rashi says happens. Tosafot says it's the other way around. Not only that, but also this. So the first thing was obvious once you read the second statement, but they wrote it in an order that says, here's the smaller chiddush, and the bigger chiddush comes afterwards. Now, what may be driving them partly is the girsa'ot in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah, again, has those three cases. In the Mishnah, you have those three instances. You have 6 months, 6 months, 12 months minus a day with the baal, and then 12 months minus a day for the yavam. So both lushonot are actually true, because once you know that 6 months in front of the husband doesn't help, then saying 12 months in front of the husband is a case of lozu avzu. Not only with 6 months doesn't it work, but even with 12 months minus a day doesn't work. Then from that to the next statement, which is when you have 12 months minus a day in front of the baal, so then you say zo. Vein tzarech lomar zo, which is the case of the yavam, when he has the 12 months minus a day, that doesn't work either. So the way that the girsa in our Mishnah reads is you actually need both lishonot. But the girsa that we have in our Gemara is Rashi's girsa. Tosafot clearly had a different girsa, but it also impacts on the girsa in the Mishnah. What were the cases in the Mishnah? Again, our Mishnah might be an amalgamation of the different girsaot, and therefore we might need both lishonot, or both literary styles in our Mishnah. Not only Rashi's style of Zo, Vein Tzarech Lomar Zo, this. And certainly we don't need to tell you about the next case, but we'll tell you anyway. And Tosafot's this. And not only that, but we'll also give you another chiddush after that, which is a greater chiddush. Zo Mishnah Rishona, the Mishnah says that this was the original thinking. After that, they switched to Mishnah Achrona, which is a woman is never entitled to Truma until there is Nisuin. So Gemara says, my time, what was the change? What changed their mind? Amar Ula, Bitema Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Mishum Simpon. Very easy to understand. The problem is Simpon. Simpon is the bitul that happens when the husband gets to know the woman well and realizes that this was a mekach ta'ot, that the whole thing was a problematic engagement, and he's going to dissolve this marriage. When he dissolves the marriage, then when she ate shuma while she was in arusa, it was problematic. Even when she's crossed over the threshold date, That's not the finality of the marriage. The finality of the marriage is the time when they actually consummate the marriage, when they have nisuin. So, bishlamalu ula. So now, according to Ula's explanation, we understand. Kamaita, in the first instance, meaning Mishnah Rishona, the problem was, shemayim zegula kos bebet avia. The problem then was what we were afraid that she was going to share with her family. That problem was solved by the Mishnah Rishona, by creating her a duchta achrite. Once he was already supposed to marry, he was giving her mizonot, he would segregate her a place where she would eat and have the mizonot, keep it away from the problem of granting it to the family. Ubatraita, the Mishnah Chona says that that's not the issue. The issue is simpon. And since the issue is simpon, setting aside a place for her is not enough. Crossing over the threshold is not enough. And therefore, we wait until the consummation of the marriage, until Nisuin, so we know that there is no question that he's going to marry this woman. So the difference between Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Chona, according to Ula, is the nature of the fear that we had. Is the fear Shema Tashket, that she's going to give to her relatives, or is the problem simpon? And that reason changed, and that's why the daya of the Mishnah Rishona changed the Mishnah Chona. Ela Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, for Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, kamaita mishum simpon, ubaitraita mishum simpon. He said that the reason that Mishnah Rishona said there was a problem is because of simpon. Mishnah Chona also thinks there's a problem of simpon. My benayu. What's the difference between Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Chona? Why did they change the halacha if the reasoning is all the same? Ikbenayu bidikat chutz. The difference between them is, now you could read this as an external check, or as Rashi explains here, bidikat chutz means you use a third party to check her. Shebadka biyad krovotav. He uses his relatives to check her out. Bidikat chutz shma bidika. That's Mishnah Rishona. That's the question. Is that sufficient? According to the Mishnah Rishona, his relatives checking her out, or the external type of check, I would say a less intimate type of check, was sufficient. And therefore, after she reached the 12-month period, we assume that he's done plenty of checking. And because of that, he would marry her without any questions. We wouldn't assume that there'd be a problem of simpon. On the other hand, the Mishnah Chona believes, that is the Mishnah Chona, which says that until the husband does the check himself, it's only he can make that decision. Only with his type of intimacy can he make the decision. And once that's done, then we will entitle her to Truma. But that won't happen until Nisuim, until the consummation of the marriage. And that's what the Mishnah Achrona says. So according to, seemingly, and this is what Tosafot mentioned earlier in the Masechta back on Memchet, that the Mishnah Achrona, everybody agrees that Simpon is the issue in the Mishnah Achrona, and there is no other reason besides Simpon. Whereas Rashi back there on Memchet seemed to suggest that the Machloket there between Rav and Ravasi actually was premised on the difference between Simpon and Shema Yim Zegula Kos, that maybe they'll give her wine and she'll share with her family. And he seemed to be saying that in the Mishnah Achrona. So Rashi seemed to think that the Machloket still persisted into Mishnah Achrona, whereas the Gemara seems, and the way Tosafot reads it, is that it does not persist in the final stages, which is that Simpon is the determining factor in the final stages. Now, Tosafot did bring an opinion yesterday which suggested that actually Shema Tashke is actually a bigger problem than Simpon, and Shema Tashke would actually last longer than the problem of Simpon. I mentioned again, it was the Tosafot back on Memchet, who suggested that the Shema Tashke just changes who the party is that she might share with. Originally, worry about her sharing with her father, her brother, her sisters. Then we worry about her sharing with the shluchim that are accompanying her. Wherever she is, she might a nice girl, she wants to share what she has, so we worry about that all along. Simpon might be terminated by any type of formal type of kinyan. When he reaches a point of kinyan, whether it's giving over to the shluchim, whether it's the ab giving over to the shluchim giving to the shluchim, that finality of kinyan already takes away the issue of simpon. And therefore, Tosafot thinks possibly that Shema Tashke is a bigger problem than simpon. And there are Rishonim, like the Rambam, who think that in the bottom line, the Mishnah Chrona, the issue is Shema Tashke, and not Simpon. Again, it matches better with the Gemara in Kiddushin as well, and seemingly that is the final issue in the Mishnah Chrona, and not Simpon. And again, that could drive Rashi's opinion as well. That's why Rashi still thinks in the Mishnah Chrona, there is an issue of Shema Tashke still there. Okay, next Mishnah. Hamakdish Masei Yedei Ishto. person is magdish the output of his wife. Harizu osa v'ochelet. She produces and she continues to get her mizonot. Hamotar, the excess, which we don't have defined here what this excess is. Rabbi Meir Omer, hekdesh, that is hekdesh. Rabbi Yochanan Asandlar Omer, chulin, that it is not hekdesh. So we'll just loosely define motar now. Motar is the excess that she produces over what is assumed that a woman would produce on a daily basis. There's a certain amount of maaseh yadayim that we would expect a woman to produce on a daily basis. If she exceeds that amount, that is called motar. The Chazal established that with regards to the maaseh yadayim, the core maaseh yadayim, that is exchanged for mizonot. So that means that the maaseh yadayim and the mizonot are the quid pro quo. With regards to the motar, the excess above the amount that she produces on a daily basis, that is exchanged for what's called a ma'a kesef. That is a allowance that's given for spending money to the woman on a weekly basis. She gets a ma'a kesef for spending money, that's an exchange for the motar. That loosely, we'll see later on, there are opinions that switch it around, but loosely that is what the exchange was. What we have to determine now is, why does the husband not have the right to magdish the ma'aseh yadayim of his wife? There could be a number of reasons why it fails, and that's what the Gemara is trying to determine. Amar Avona Amarav. Yecholah Yisha Lomar Lebala. A woman has the right to say to her husband, Eini Nizonet Ve'eni Osa. I don't want your mizonot, and I don't want to have to produce. I don't want to do Maaseh Yadayim. Kasavar. From here it's clear that Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, believes, Ki Takin Rabbanan Mizonei Ikar. That when the Rabbanah made the Takana, Mizonot were the Ikar part of the Takana. Her entitlement to Mizonot was the Ikar Takana. She had that first right. Then, Umaseh Yadea Mishum Eva. On the other hand, why were the Maaseh Yadayim granted to the husband? Because we didn't want resentment to build in the marriage. Here he is, supporting her, sustaining her, giving her Mizonot. In the meantime, she's keeping her own bank account. She's producing and keeping her own money. No, if I'm going to support her and take care of her, she should contribute her Maaseh Yadayim into the larger pot, into my pot. So that was a secondary takana, Mishum Eva. V'chi Amra, Eini Nizonet, V'eini Osa. And therefore, she has the right to make the determination and say, I don't want the Mizonot, and I won't give in the Maaseh Yadayim. Harushut V'yada. She has such a right. The takana is for her benefit. Her benefit is, she gets Mizonot. Why is it for her benefit? Because sometimes her Maaseh Yadayim won't equal up to the Mizonot. So Chazal made a complete determination, which is every woman is entitled to Mizonot. Okay, now, once we've established that she gets Mizonot, the husband will be entitled to her Maaseh Yadayim. But that means if the woman feels that her Maaseh Yadayim will exceed her Mizonot, or she wants to use her Maaseh Yadayim to eat, that is totally fine because the Takana was for her benefit. If she opts out, she wants to decline the takana, that's fine. Good analogy is in football. When there's a penalty that is assigned to one of the teams, they have the choice now to take that benefit from the penalty or decline the penalty if they've done better. So she here also says that's it. Here they gave her the rights to Mizonot. If she feels she can do better, she has the right to decline the Mizonot and say, I'll do it on my own. That's the way the Rav Huna Merav formulates the situation here. Based on that, we could understand now possibly why the Mishnah would say that the husband doesn't have the right to be makdish them. In the end, since she controls what happens with the Maaseh Yadayim, because she can pull the plug at any moment, since she controls the Maaseh Yadayim, the husband doesn't have sufficient control to be makdish it. He's not really the one who owns it. He's not even the one who really controls it. The woman can make that determination. She both can decide whether to keep it or give it to him. And number two is, she's the one who's going to produce it. So, in both cases, she's both the owner and the controller of what happens to the Maaseh Yadayim. And that's why the husband may not have sufficient power to be makdish the Maaseh Yadayim. Now, Gemara says, Meitave, is that really true? We saw this earlier on. Tiknu Mizonot, Tachat Maaseh Yadayim. They granted her Mizonot for her Maaseh Yadayim. So if you were to read this statement, it sounds like Maaseh Yadayim were the core. And then the husband gave her Mizonot because he was keeping the Maaseh Yadayim. So Ema, the Gemara says, amend that to read, Tiknu Maaseh Yadayim Tachat Mizonot. Should read the other way around, which is that her Maaseh Yadayim were Tachat Mizonot, implying that Mizonot were the Ikar. Lema Messiah, let us say our Mishnah supports what Rav Huna Merav said, which is, a Makdish Maaseh Yadei Ishto, If he makes his wife's production kadosh, harzeo savo chelet, she can produce, eat, and there is nothing that is hektesh over here. My love, what is the situation at hand here? Isn't it a case bit nizonet? Not in a case literally where she's getting mizonot, but a case where the husband is offering to give her mizonot. The husband says, I have the means by which to feed you and grant you mizonot. I'm offering you mizonot. And what the woman says, no thank you. Or, even though the husband is offering mizonot, it's really not up to him. The woman is still the determining factor with regards to mizonot. Since she is the determining factor, this is supportive of Rav Huna Amar Rav, which is, he doesn't have the right to do anything with the Masei Yadayim, because even though he's offering the mizonot, it's still not his decision, it's her decision. Rav says, well, b'she'eni nizonet. Our mission is a case where he doesn't have sufficient funds to support her. So therefore, she by definition will keep her Masei Yadayim, because she needs to support herself, she needs to eat. The Masei Yadayim are going to stay with her, because he's not providing her the quid pro quo, which is the mizonot. Rav says, e b'she'eni nizonet, ma'la memra. Okay, if he's not providing her with mizonot, doesn't have the funds to provide her mizonot, of course he can't be makdish or masei yadayim, because he doesn't own them. He's not going to get them. So, Mar says, afilu l'man damar yachola rav lomar le'eved aseimi ve'eni zancha, because even though there is an opinion, it's a machloket in a number of places in Shas, whether the master can make an agreement with the Eved Kenani and say, basically, work for me, and I will not support you. I will not give you mizonot. Can that work? Does that work? It's seemingly, because the Eved Kenani works for him, he has to provide him with mizonot. So there are two opinions. One opinion is, yes, that's the case, and you can't alter that. If he works for you, you got to provide him mizonot. There's another opinion, which is, you can make a condition. As long as it was stipulated up front, you can say to him, listen, you're going to come work for me, but I'm not going to support you. Hani mili be'Eved Kenani. That only works when you have an Eved Kenani, delok div bay, because it's not written by him, imach, that he is together with you. Aval Eved Ivri, dichtiv bay imach, that he has to be together with you, lo, you can't make such a condition. So with regards to an Eved Kenani, you can have him work for you and not provide him as a note. You can have the best of both worlds. That you're allowed to do. You're allowed to stipulate that. By an Eved Ivri, you certainly cannot do that, because it says imach, that you have to take care of him. You have to provide for him. Since the Torah states that you have to provide for him, you don't have a way to opt out of it. So if you take him as an Eved Ivri, you're providing for him. And then, and here, Al-Chad Kama V'Kama, when it's talking about his wife, talking about Eved Ivri, where his wife, he can't make a condition where, basically, you give me the Masei Yadayim, I don't provide you Mizonot. Which would basically be the outcome over here. If he says any Nizonet, I don't have funds to support you, and she gives him the Masei Yadayim, then basically what he's done is taking her Masei Yadayim and not providing her mizonot. That's illegal. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that with your wife. You're not allowed to have an agreement that works in that way. So if that's the case, he clearly does not have rights to the mizonot. If he doesn't have rights to the mizonot, why do you have to tell me? Can't be makdish them. Can't be makdish something you don't own. Seifait strichale. They needed the latter half of the Mishnah, which is motar. Rabbi Meir Omer Hekdesh, Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar Omer Chulin. The Chiddush is the latter half of the Mishnah, which is the excess. With regards to the motar, whether you can make that into Hekdesh or you cannot make that into Hekdesh, and that's the Chiddush, Enochanami. The first half of the Mishnah, clearly, he doesn't have rights to be Makdish. That's obvious, the Mishnah didn't need to write it. It's just writing it as a stepping stone to get to the second half of the Mishnah, which is the Chiddush. Upliga Dereish Lakish. Now this argues on Reish Lakish. Again, there's no reference, it's like a dangling modifier. This argues on Reish Lakish, but it references back to Rav Huna Amar Rav, which is that this argues on Rav Huna Amar Rav, Reish Lakish's opinion. Damar Reish Lakish, lo tema taima de Rabbi Meir mishum de kasavar adam makdish davar shalo beleolam. Don't say that the reasoning behind Rav Meir's position in the Mishnah is because a person has the ability to be makdish, something that has yet to exist in the world, something that's not here yet. Ela taima de Rabbi Meir. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir? Mitoch sheyachol lekofa lemasei yadeha. Because he can force her to give up her masei yadayim. Naseka omer la, yikadshu yadayich lo sehem. It's as if he says that I makdish your hands to their maker. V'halo amar la hachi. That's not what he said. We know that he said in the Mishnah, makdish masei yadayishto. That's the language that he used. He didn't use the language that is used there. So Gemara says, no, Kevan Dishmain and Leila Rabbi Meir, since we heard from Rabbi Meir Damar, in Adam Butzi Dvarav Levatala, A person never says something that has no meaning. So we're going to grant meaning to their statement. We'll alter their statement to grant it meaning. Therefore, it's as if he stipulated that I'm makdish your hands to the Creator. Here we have a number of factors that are being discussed. Number one is, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Gemara here will quote it in a second, that you're allowed to be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam, you can transact with things that don't exist in the world yet. The Chachamim say you can only transact with tangible items. Intangible items you cannot transact with, especially things that don't exist. So that's davar shelo ba'al olam. Rabbi Meir says, no, I can't deal with things that are davar shelo ba'al olam. Now, you can see this in the next statement. B'savar Rabbi Meir, ina dam makdish davar shelo ba'al olam. Rish Lakish makes the statement that that's not the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir. Wait a minute. Vatanya, we have an explicit braita in Kiddushin. Omer li yishariyat mikudeshet li lachar she'et gayer. I will marry you. This Kiddushin will go through after I convert. O lachar she'tit gayri. Or after you convert. He offers her Kiddushin. Lachar she'eshtachrer. After I'm freed from being an Eved Kanani, this will be our Kiddushin. Lachar she'tishtachreri. He says that to a Shifka Kananit. Once you're freed, this will be the Kesef Kiddushim. Lachar shimot balech. After your husband passes away, then our Kiddushim will take effect. He's the backup husband. The husband passed away, she's got a backup in the wings. O shetamut achutech. He is married to her sister. And he says, I can't marry you because I'm married to your sister right now. You know what? This Kiddushim will be effective when my wife passes away, your sister passes away, and then we'll have Kiddushim. O lachar sheachlots lech yivamech. Or after your Yavam does Chalitza with you, the Kiddushin will take effect. Rabbi Meir Omer, Mikudeshet. It works. So you see here that Rabbi Meir believes that even Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam, these are things that don't exist yet. He has yet to convert. She has yet to convert. She is still married now. All of these things, right now, you can't make the Kiddushin effective. They'll only go effective once whatever condition is placed, Jade, takes place. But that's all in the future. Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. There, Rabbi Meir says, works, no problem. So why is Reish Lakish coming saying, over here in our Mishnah, that's not the reason of Rabbi Meir? Why not? That is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Why shouldn't that be his reason? He says, Mihai in, Miha, like Alamashim Mina. He says, you're right. From that bright in Kiddushin, it's clear that Rabbi Meir believes that you can deal or transact with things that Darash Shabbat Olam. Miha, our Mishnah, you can't prove that. On our Mishnah, you could explain Rabbi Meir in one of two ways. You can explain Rabbi Meir as either being Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam, and therefore he's able to be Makdishit, that's one possibility, or the other possibility behind Rabbi Meir's position is the way that Reish Lakish explained it, which is that Rabbi Meir says, since the person has control over her Masa Yadayim, that's the first stipulation, which goes against Rav Huna Marav. Rav Huna Marav says, who's in control? The woman. What does Reish Lakish say in Rabbi Meir's opinion? The man is in control. He can force her to give the Masa Yadayim. That's the first stage. The second stage is, you can't be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam. Since you can't be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam, how are you makdish her masei yadayim? Her masei yadayim don't exist. It's production that she's going to do in the future. How can you be makdish something that is in the future? The answer is that you change the way that it is phrased. You phrase it in such a manner that you makdish something that does exist already. Those are her hands. So you say that her hands are kadosh to her creator. What does that mean that her hands are kadosh to her creator? That means those hands, whatever they produce, will also be kadosh. But the hekdesh is chal on something that exists currently. And that will work. The Gemara says that's not what Rabbi Meir said in the Mishnah. That's not the Lashon of Mishnah. The Gemara invokes another principle of Rabbi Meir, which is Rabbi Meir, this is found in the Gemara in Erachin, also in Temurah, that Rabbi Meir says that a person is not motzi mipiv davar lebatala. When a person says something, he meant it. So if he meant it, we got to figure out how it has meaning. So if he says two things that are seemingly contradictory, we have to make them both come to fruition. So also over here, he says something that seemingly will have no effect because he's makdish something that's intangible. So he says, clearly people know you can't be makdish that something is intangible. Therefore, when he said, I'm makdish her output, that means as if he said, I'm makdish her yadayim le'osehem. And therefore, that will be the explanation of Rabbi Meir. Now, by doing that, you have two ways to view Rabbi Meir over here. Both of them are the shitato. One is Rabbi Meir l'shitato, that you can be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam. That could easily be the explanation of our Mishnah over here, assuming that the husband is in control. That's number one. Assuming the husband is in control, then you can be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam. That's Rabbi Meir l'shitato. Or You can say that it's Rabbi Meir l'shitatal, that a person is not motzi mipiv davar levatala, and therefore he really meant to say not that it's a davar shelo balei olam, but is on her hand, and therefore yadayich lo sehem, that is enough to create even without davar shelo balei olam. It's enough because it says ein adam motzi davarav levatala. So there are two ways to view Rabbi Meir. The difference being whether who's in control here. According to Rav Huna Merav, the woman's in control. Therefore, none of this discussion gets off the ground because he can't force her to give up the Maaseh Yadayim. On the other hand, Reish Lakish believes that the husband is in control, and then there's a discussion now within Rabbi Meir, if the husband's in control, why does Rabbi Meir say it works? Well, it works either because Davar Shelo B'Olam or because of In Adam Mosi Davarav Levatala. Now, as far as Davar Shelo B'Olam, Tosafot takes up the issue here. In other places, we discuss this in Yevamot, that many believe in the opinion of Rabbi Meir, that that's only true when it's Davar Shelo B'Olam, but it is something that will eventually come about. That they will come. For instance, fruits on a tree. The tree exists today. The fruits are not there. If you transact in those fruits, those are things that don't exist. But Rabbi Meir says it works. The Gemara there says that's because of Avidatu. Trees produce fruit. You can assume, you can expect the fact that these trees will produce fruit. Therefore, you can transact in Davar Shelo B'Olam according to Rabbi Meir. Tosafot then is stuck here with our Braita that we just quoted. When I convert, we'll have Kiddushin. When you convert, we'll have Kiddushin. That's not a vididatu. That's not something that will happen automatically. That's not an outcome that you can foresee. Now, some of these issues, you can say, well, it's in their control. Some of them are in his control. Some of them are not in his control. Some of them freeing the Eved, that's not his control. So Tosafot gives answers like he overheard the master saying that he's going to free her. Some of those things might be anticipatory, and therefore he knows it's going to happen. But Tosafot then does give an answer, which is that the guf is be'olam. In cases like here, where when you convert, I will marry you, the woman exists today. Her status will change. So it's a davar shelo ba'olam in the sense of her status changing. But in terms of her, she's here now. She exists already. So that's not a classic case of Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam, and that's where Rabbi Meir will compare it or say that it's similar to Avidi Da'atu. Because the core is like the tree, which is existence, and the fruit will come. So too by the people over here. Eventually, her husband will die. Eventually, she might convert. Meaning, it's not for sure, it's not as certain as the fruit, but the fact that there's enough of something that exists today, it's not completely Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam, and that's why you would be able to transact or do these transactions that deal with the future, even though they are not exactly avidi da'atu. In addition, Tosafot offers another qualification, which is possibly Rabbi Meir believes you can transact with dvarim shelo ba'al olam in instances when there's only one safek. There's only one uncertainty to get to that outcome, but where there are multiple uncertainties, then even Rabbi Meir will agree that you can't transact with regards to that davar shelo ba'al olam. And there are many that believe that Rabbi Meir believes Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam works all the time. These other qualifications are arguments within the Shita of Rabbi Meir, but Rabbi Meir himself might believe you're always allowed to transact with Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. Alright, now the Gemara continues and says, Hamotar Rabbi Meir Omer Hekdesh. Now the Gemara wants to know, Emat Kadosh. When does this Motar become Kadosh? This Motar, this excess that she has of Maaseh Yadayim above what she's supposed to produce, when does it become kadosh? Rav Shmuel d'Amrei Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel both believe motar la'achar mita kadosh. When Rabbi Meir says it becomes kadosh, that's after she dies, after she passes away. Ravader Rav Amar motar michayim kadosh. No, it's kadosh from whenever she produces it; it becomes kadosh. Havi Barav Papa. Rav Papa says, let's figure this out. I really don't understand the difference in opinions here. But what's the case? Ilema b'malela mizonot umalala ma kesef. If it's a case where he's supporting her, he's giving her mizonot, and it's a case where he's granting her the weekly allowance, my time of demand amar lachar mita kadosh. Then what's the reasoning behind the one who says that it's only after death that it's kadosh? He is entitled to her motar because he's giving her the allowance. He's taking care of her. If he's taking care of her, everything is his. So why isn't it kadosh? Ve'alosh k'she'ein malala mizonot ve'lo malala ma'akesef l'tzorcheha. So what you can tell me, it's a case where he's not giving her mizonot, and a case where he's not giving the allowance. My time is man da'amar mi'chaim kadosh. Then what's the reasoning behind the one who says that while she's alive, it becomes kadosh? you can't explain either opinion because in the case where he's providing, it's his. So as soon as he gets it, it should become kadosh because it's his entitlement. On the other hand, if you say that he's not providing her, then they never become his. And it would only happen when he inherits her after she dies. That's when it would become kadosh, because that's when he inherits her. But you can't explain the alternate opinion in each of these cases. The alternate opinion makes no sense. Why, if he is giving her allowance, should he have to wait until achar mitah for it to be kadosh? If he's not providing her allowance, then why should he be able to make it kadosh now? He doesn't own it. He doesn't have control over it now. It's a case where he's providing her mizonot, and he's not giving her the weekly allowance. Rav Shmuel Savrei. So Rav Shmuel believed, no, mizonot tachet maseya deha. The way that the structure of this takanai is, the mizonot are the quid pro quo for the maseya daim, and the mal kesev is tachet motar, and the weekly allowance is for the excess that she produces. V'kev into lo yaiv la mal kesef, since he's not providing her the weekly allowance, motar dida. The motar is hers, and he will only get the rights to it after she passes away. And therefore, Rav Shmuel said that only achar mita, after she dies, does it become kadosh. Because that's when this individual gets it into his possession. Again, Rabbi Meir says, you can be makdish davar shelo ba'adi olam. According to that reasoning, he can be makdish something that he will only gain after her death. What's that? The motar. He's not entitled to it now because he's not providing her the allowance. Since he's not providing her the allowance, it's hers. It'll become his when she dies. So he's makdish, that future motar that will come into his possession when she passes away. On the other hand, Ravada Bahava Savar, Tiknu Mizonot, Tachet Motar, Umal Kesef, Tachet Maseyadea. Mizonot was in exchange for the excess that she produces, and the weekly allowance was in for her Maseyadaim, her core Maseyadaim. The came into Kayoiv La Mizone, since he's giving her Mizonot, Motar Dideyavi. The excess belongs to him. He's paying her mizonot, therefore he gets the motar. So therefore he can be makdishit. On the other hand, it's clear here that according to Rav Ada Bahava, with regards to the korma seyidayim, he can't be makdish them because he's not providing her the mal kesef. He's not providing the allowance, the weekly allowance. Vamai kamiflike. Why are they arguing about the alignment of the quid pro quo here? Mar savar mide deshkiach, me mide deshkiach. Rav and Shmuel believe, you line up things that are common with things that are common. Maseya daim is something that is frequent. It's a daily production. It's something that the woman will give every day. Mizonot is something that you need every day. So I line up maseya daim tachat mizonot. And then when it comes to motar, excess is something that happens on occasion. Doesn't happen every day. Won't always happen. Doesn't happen for every woman. And that is for the malkesa, which is the weekly allowance. It's a smaller thing. It's not something you get every day. On the other hand, Rav Ada Bahava believes that we line up things that are of a fixed nature with things that are of a fixed nature. Mal kesef, the weekly allowance, is a fixed amount. The masa yadayim is also a fixed amount. Chazal tell us, we're going to get to this in tomorrow's daf, that the expectation of what her masa yadayim is the daily production. That's a fixed amount. That's the daily production. Therefore, the quid pro quo was mal kesef for the masa yadayim. Motar is exactly that. That is something that is unit contingency, which is that if she does produce above her masiyadayim, then you will have motar. Mizonot is also something that has no fixed amount. It's not like there's a fixed payment. There is mizonot. He has to provide whatever she needs, whatever mizonot she needs, he will provide for her. So since those are both not fixed, therefore he connected the motar to the mizonot. And for that reason, they come out with different opinions as to when the motar is kadosh, according to Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Ada Bahava, it's immediately, because he's going to get the motar immediately. Since he's paying mizonot, he's going to get the motar. On the other hand, Rav and Shmuel believe it doesn't become kadosh until after she passes away and he inherits it, because he's not giving her the mal kesef, which is for the motar. Now, in the case of the kor mizonot, again, for Rav and Shmuel, he will be able to be makdish maseyadayim because he's giving her a mizonot. Since he's giving her a mizonot, he's entitled to those maseyadayim. Technically, he should be able to be makdish them. Why can't he makdish them? Because it's not his choice. He doesn't have enough control, and that may be why that's the case. Or, as Tosfot says over here, Rav and Shmuel mukmei matnitim and chain malayim mizonot v'lo mal kesef. Rav and Shmuel will establish that our mission is a case where he's not giving her mizonot and not giving her mal kesef. None of those. So then, for Rav Shmuel in the Mishnah, either like Tosfot says, he's not being Malei Mizonot, or the Tosfot Yishanim says that he offered to be Malei Mizonot, and she's rejecting it, because she's in control, or it could be the mere fact that the woman still maintains control over that decision, that he doesn't have enough control to be Magdish, the Masei Yadayim, because she's the one who holds the cards. Even if she doesn't exercise that right, since she does have that right, he doesn't have sufficient control in order to be Magdishit at this point. And the Tosfot Reed says that our Mishnah can be even according to the one who says that she doesn't have control and he has control, that it still doesn't work, because he says, "B'taima de milta b'nesh yachol harim." He can play games. V'amar, any roots of the zoncha. I don't want to feed you today. And therefore she would be compelled to use her Masei Yadayim. And because of that, the Masei Yadayim are not sufficiently his to be Magdish them, even though he controls whether he keeps them or not. But because he could play games and say, oh, you know what, I don't want to feed you anymore, and the Masei Yadayim would go back to her, that indicates not sufficient ownership for him to be able to be Magdishit. So therefore, there are all different types of permutations in which we would say that he's not able to be Magdish the Masei Yadayim, and Rav Shmuel can use any one of those explanations to explain why in the Mishnah the Masei Yadayim are not Hekdesh. Of course, for Rav Abba, the Mishnah is easy to understand. It's a case where he's not giving her the Mal Kesef, he's not entitled to her Masei Yadayim. Since he's not entitled to her Masei Yadayim, that's why he can't be Magdish the Masei Yadayim. The guards to the Motar, which he is entitled to because he's giving her a Mizonot, that's the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar. Can you be Makdish, Davar Shalom Baleolam? If you can, then when he gets a hold of the Motar, as soon as that happens, Shushi produces it, it will be Hekdesh. Okay, we'll stop over here. 8 lines down on the top of Nuntet Amud Aleph.